Anyway, if you want to be on the program, you can join us, 850-479-DINO, extension 136. 850-479-DINO, that's 3466 for you alphabetically challenged folks, and then the extension is 136, and you'll get live on the program. You can discuss the topics of creation, evolution, and dinosaurs.
Or on AOL Instant Messenger. Dr. Dino Live is our screen name, Dr. Dino Live, D-R-D-I-N-O-L-I-V-E. And I guess, incidentally enough, they can actually contact us through some other chat programs called ICQ. And there may be an internet-based one.
There's ICQ. One. Is that supposed to be a joke, like I seek you? Is that
I think
play
so.
On words?
Yeah, I think so. There's also Miranda and all these other types out there who can communicate.
And they all come, they all work, huh?
Well, they can. Some of them can work, you know, with AOL Instant Messenger. So if anybody doesn't have AOL Instant Messenger, they can download it absolutely free from AOL.com or, you know, Miranda or ICQ. I guess those respectively have their .com names, too.
Yeah, well, good.
We are all over the place.
All over. And we get calls and letters from everywhere. You can also instant message us or call us right away on the subject of creation evolution. We just leave somebody hanging just about every day where we don't get to all of them. So get in early. It's the Creation Science Hour and a Half. For those that have not seen our award-winning video series, we've put out
multi-award-winning
video series.
Come on, that was an understatement, Dr. Hoven.
I was. I know. About four or five times, I guess, now it's won awards.
Been a magazine, featured a magazine.
Yeah, oh, yeah. One pretty large homeschooling magazine said ours rated first right behind Disney.
Woohoo!
Ours rated second. I mean, Disney got first. We got, and one year we got first. We beat Disney. We beat VeggieTales. We beat them all.
All right.
So,
well, that's what happens when you have all the answers. I mean, you kind of just float to the top.
Yep. All right. You can call us, 850-479-DINO, extension 136. Let me take some articles here. We got some really cool articles to read, comments to make, our totally unbiased opinion. That's why people listen in. People listen in because we are so unbiased about the topic. We have a caller already? Okay, well, we take callers first. We didn't get to our articles yet. We'll get to them in a minute. All right, Jonathan, who's on the phone there?
I have no idea.
Yes, hang on 1 second. Let me get the headphones on. We usually...
Okay, well, who's the caller?
Grant.
Government Grant.
You're on the ball, man.
Go ahead.
Y'all been listening to the news, is all the uproar Bush's statement in causing?
About intelligent design?
Yeah.
I know, I've been wondering, what's the opposite of intelligent design? The other side would be dumb luck.
Dumb chance, something like that.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, so what's the uproar about?
Oh, man, just everyone's been flipping out over. They had the two or three creationists versus three evolutionists on Larry King Live just going back and forth at it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you know who they were?
No, never seen any of them before.
Ah.
I think one was a school teacher, one was a senator. The senator was on the side of intelligent design. The school teacher was on the side of evolution. They had a couple other guys. Just one, he couldn't speak English very well. He was an evolutionist.
I wonder if it was Stigliucci.
Anti-intelligent design, from what I could tell.
Uh-huh.
They had this one reverend who was for intelligent design. They had him the caption on Larry King Live. Is intelligent design creationism in disguise?
First, it wouldn't matter. What is truth is all that matters, okay? I don't care what it's if anything. I don't think anything's disguised as something else. What is truth? The truth is, evolution is a religion. We never see a dog produce a non-dog. Never. That's the truth. Anything else is a religion. So if they want to believe, you know, capital B, believe, that a dog can come from a rock, okay, well, great, go ahead and believe that. But that's not science.
Well, that seems to be the whole argument of the evolutionists. They're playing the science versus religion card. We're science, we have the facts to support us, your religion, and the only reason you don't like evolution is because your religion disagrees with it.
See, nobody's pushing the right button here. They're not pointing out, no, evolution is the religion.
That's because it is widespread ignorance. People are ignorant of the fact that evolution does not have any evidence to support it. Everything they're using has either been proven wrong, is heavily circumstantial and due to much interpretation, or is just... I forget the first one I used. It was proven wrong or deliberate fabrication, whichever the
deal. Yeah, I mean, there definitely are some just bold-faced lies that are used to support this theory. I wish they would just teach truth. Now, if the truth points to the conclusion that, you know, we came from a rock and evolution's true, then great, that's fine, go for it. If the truth points to the fact that, you know, this is impossible and there had to be a designer. I mean, if a bunch of natives found a computer on the beach and they gathered around and they're going to argue, hey, what, where did this computer come from, you know? And so right away the leaders get together and decide, okay, we have to have a naturalistic explanation. We're not going to, there is nobody outside of our island, okay, we're it. Now, how did the computer come based on just our island? Okay, well, they're never going to find an answer because they've already limited the scope of the inquiry. And I think what the intelligent design folks are doing is saying, look, why have we limited science to the things that we've limited it to? I mean, this is dumb to say there has to be a naturalistic explanation. There may not be a naturalistic explanation.
Well, that's just, you know, saying that, well, there has to be a naturalistic explanation, that's not following the evidence wherever it leads you.
Right, and just that is not science. That
yeah.
already that already establishes a prejudice.
Yep, you've already let, I mean, if you're going to do that, then you're not doing free science here.
Right.
I mean, you're saying, I'm going
to
follow it
up to
over
this
there.
Wall. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're limiting their thinking. They're stuck in this little tiny box that they made for themselves, and they're not willing to consider anything outside the box. I feel sorry for them.
The problem with their theory is, since they are limiting themselves to the natural, and it obviously can't happen that way, but we can do experiments on the natural. We can prove that that theory isn't right, whereas we cannot do experiments on the supernatural, and therefore you can't say a definite yes or no on that.
That is true. You can't do experiments on the supernatural, but you can come to the conclusion, okay, we're out of science. There must be a supernatural answer for this. Like, for instance, the guys on the beach find a computer,
mm-hmm.
and they say, you know, you can't limit this to our island. These things don't appear on our island.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody here is making these things. There must be somebody off the island producing this.
I wonder what, you know, does it really benefit us to go with a naturalistic explanation concerning origins as opposed to a supernatural one? Does it really benefit us today? Does it really, you know, get people out of hospitals? Does it really put people back on their feet once they're crippled to believe that something happened naturally as opposed to something happening by the hand of God? Does it really benefit us? And if not, why are they so insanely psychotic that we must adhere to some natural, you know, naturalistic explanation?
Yeah, well, I can tell you why they're psychotic about that, because if there's a creator, there might be some rule.
Mm-hmm.
They like to think they are God of this universe.
More of a hidden agenda, I guess.
Right, yeah. Absolutely hidden agenda. Second Peter prophesied that was going to happen. In the last days, there would be scoffers who would be willingly ignorant of the creation and the flood because of their lust. He hit it right smack on the head. I mean, you couldn't get better than that.
I think a lot of the theory of evolution is a deception from the devil. If you research the history of evolution, the key people that were responsible for it, many of them were spiritists or involved in some form of spiritual rituals, and many of them claim that they derived their theories during seances.
Right.
So yeah. I think it could be a really big deception.
Yeah.
From the devil himself. And I think a lot of times when these evolutionists get so riled up, it's kind of the devil is jumping out in them.
Yeah. Well, boy, you can watch some of the debates and you can sure see it on their face. You know, something's eating at them. You know, they're not, they don't have scientific evidence for their theory. They just get so angry, you know, when they talk about creation.
And really, when you get down to it, they can't define what they really believe in either. They think that the absolute is matter in motion.
What
define matter?
Yeah, and if that's the case, if all we are is animated meat, then what's the purpose to life? You know, feel good, pass on your genes, and, you know.
What was it that, yeah, you know, Dr. Nolan said yesterday to you? You know, if the whole origin of your life is meaningless, or how did it go?
If the beginning is meaningless and the end is meaningless, why not just admit the middle is meaningless too?
Mm-hmm.
True. Yeah, there's no purpose to life. Hey, we're here, eat, drink, be merry. Tomorrow we die.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a naturalistic philosophy that flows from that.
Well, it doesn't matter how much money you make or anything in this life. You're going to die and be buried in the dirt just like the poorest sap out there.
Right.
I mean, that's the way it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you can be a police negotiator and have a faith in evolutionists. I mean, you got a guy with the gun to his head. What's he got to live for?
Yeah, what are you going to tell him? Hey, don't kill yourself because, you know, we need you here. No, we don't. We don't need anybody here. It's better off if you all die. Let's all go kill ourselves. You know?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, we're hurting Mother Earth.
any benefit derived by that individual will be nullified in a couple billion years, and the next Big Bang comes along and squashes everything back to a teeny tiny dot. I mean, the family relationships we have here don't really matter, seeing as we don't have free will. It's just a advanced form of instinct, pre-programmed emotions.
Right, and if we just came from matter and motion, how do we know we're even having this conversation? How do we know we're really here? How can you know anything?
How can you have any absolutes?
That's why I have. They tell me that in debates. They say there are no absolutes. I did a debate last night after the program here with a guy in Colorado. I'm going to be debating this Friday night in Colorado Springs with two guys. One's the head of the Colorado Citizens for Excellence in Science or something like that.
You made two against one again.
Yeah.
Well, you actually had 3-on-1 last night.
I told him we'll take 10-on-1.
Mm-hmm. 146
no
on one.
Sure.
Yeah.
If I get half the time,
mm-hmm.
and we talk about one topic at a time, I mean, that's fair. What more could you want?
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Well, Grant, thanks for calling.
Okay.
All right. Call in again if you get any questions or comments.
One more thing,
sure.
Real quick. There's one scripture I wanted to talk to you about. I was talking about a little bit earlier how they believe matter in motion is the absolute. So there's got to be one thing, one absolute that defines everything else. It can't be defined because it itself is the definition of other things. Now, I believe it was ancient Greeks, I think it was Democritus, who theorized that the atom was the smallest unit of matter.
Right.
Then later on, during the nuclear age, we found out that the atom itself is composed of subatomic particles. You have the nucleus, the neutron, and within that you have the proton, the neutron, and surrounding it, the electron.
Right.
And we thought that was the smallest for a while. And then we found out that there were even smaller particles, like quarks. And then we got even smaller, going to the theory area. I think if you keep breaking down smaller and smaller and smaller, you'll eventually get to the point where you reach the absolute. And I think that the absolute is God. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 3, the Hall of Faith says, through faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that things which are seen were not made of things which do appear. Matter is not made out of matter. It's made out of the word of God spoken of existence. When it talks about Jesus, that in the beginning was the word, and the word was with God, and by him all things exist. I mean, there are several natural laws, gravity, inertia. We can't explain why they work. They just do.
Well, I wondered if just the voice of God is what actually everything consists of. You know, God spoke. He said, let there be, let there be, let there be, all through Genesis. I know when they if high energy sound waves hit water, it produces light. Kind of interesting. Maybe that's all we're seeing. I don't know. That's a problem God will have to fix. Okay.
All right.
Hey, thanks a lot. All right. Bye-bye. All right, folks, going to call in, 850-479-DINO, 850-479-DINO, extension 136. Jonathan, looks like Tropical Storm Katrina
again
is headed our way.
Another one.
That's wonderful. I like hurricanes. They're fun.
They're not too bad. It's the 2 weeks that follow the hurricanes that gets kind of irritating.
You got to pick up all the branches and put their shingles back on the roof.
No power, no hot water, no cable,
right. No
internet, no nothing.
So... yeah, it looks like it's getting organized and projected to come across Florida and come up and hit Pensacola. We like Pensacola.
Fantastic.
Okay. Well, good. All right. For instant messages, Dr. Dino Live. Let's read a few articles here. We got all kinds of news coming up and interesting stuff to read. Okay. And Glenda's going to be here for another hurricane. You know, Florida didn't have any hurricanes until Glenda moved down here from Georgia. What does that tell you, Jonathan?
Glenda is the evil queen of hurricanes.
They're attracted to her.
Yeah. Well, it's the young, blonde-haired, blue-eyed secretary. Hurricanes are going to, of course, just flock in her direction.
Is that it? The magnetic personality.
She's got her own little aura.
That's right.
Yeah.
Although, yeah, it's not too well organized. But you'll get into the golf and get organized. We'll get out there and stir it up a little bit. Yeah. Okay. God's judgment on the county for going after our ministry. What it is. Here we go. Because our ministry hardly ever gets hurt. I mean, we get a few trees down, but, you know, a little minor damage here and there. Everybody else gets clobbered. Okay, here we go. MSNBC. Best seller, Natural Cures.
Mm-hmm.
That book that guy's on TV about. Sparks court battle. Consumer agency cries fraud. Infomercial King cries First Amendment. Gerald Bates thought he found the answer to a prayer. 69-year-old Clyde, New York resident, has type 2 diabetes, and he's concerned about taking insulin injections. But one night in late June, he turned onto a breathtaking infomercial hosted by Kevin Trudeau, Natural Cures They Don't Want You to Know About. Trudeau, a longtime infomercial master with a preacher's flair for the camera, urged viewers to buy his Natural Cures book. In it, Bates understood, readers would find simple, all-natural remedies for terrible conditions like cancer, diabetes, even weight gain. I was skeptical, but I thought, he pitches a good story, Bates said, so Bates paid $39 for the book. Bates is hardly alone. Trudeau's infomercial has helped him turn his home into the top-ranked, his tomb, T-O-M-E, tome, tome, book, into the top-ranked book on the New York Times self-help bestseller list. The author says over 4 million copies have been sold. A mountain of the book sit on a table at the entrance of Barnes & Noble, Fifth Avenue, New York Fifth Avenue, right next to Harry Potter Mountain. Television infomercials hawking the book are, by one measure, the most aired long-form ad on TV. But Bates and his and other consumers now say they were had. There are hundreds of angry posts on Amazon.com's page devoted to natural cures, and about a dozen New York consumers have now contacted the New York State Consumer Protection Board. The book is just gobbledygook. There's nothing in it. He doesn't say what the cures are, but instead, on page after page of the book, urges readers to head to Trudeau's website, Natural Cures. Consumers must pay $10 a month to use the site.
We can top that. We got BillSardi.com. It's all free.
Yeah, BillSardi.com.
Yeah.
Actually, it's knowledgeofhealth.com. But yeah, that's Bill Sardi's site. And for those,
listen to the radio program.
We'll be back, folks, right after the break. Join us in a minute.
I'm excited about a new resource just made available to Truth Radio. A friend of Truth Radio has sent us a quantity of a booklet entitled Our American Common Law. If you've wondered what the difference is between common law, equity law, contract law, all these very important distinctions, and how the gold or money issue enters into this whole discussion, this booklet is for you, and we have enough copies, so I'm sure we can send you one. This is just under 30 pages, and it's yours entirely free of charge in return for your contribution of any size to Truth Radio. We need your support. Our address is Post Office Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. Ask for the booklet entitled Common Law.
Hey, Bob, would you sign this form?
Sure. What's it for?
Oh, it's just a form saying you won't hold me responsible for anything I've done wrong.
What? I'm not signing that. Why are you doing this?
Well, when I die, God is going to judge me and all the things I've done wrong. But I'm going to show him this form saying that nobody else holds me responsible, so he'll just have to let me into heaven.
Uh-huh. What about my car?
What about your car?
You smashed the fender.
Right. That's why you're on the list.
Wouldn't it be better if you paid for the damage?
No, it would be better if you signed the form.
This isn't going to work.
Why not?
Well, do you have Jesus' name on your list?
Why do I need his name?
When you wrong others, you wrong God by breaking his law. In order to be right with God and be allowed into heaven, you need his forgiveness.
Bummer. I was kind of hoping I wouldn't have to admit I've done anything wrong.
Yeah. Pride is always the first thing you have to lose when you ask for forgiveness.
A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-523-8669. LifelinePro.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson here live, August the 24th. Did you know Hurricane Andrew hit South Florida about this same time of year, a couple years ago?
I have no idea who Hurricane Andrew
was. He died, but it did incredible damage. It was probably the worst hurricane to hit Pensacola, hit Florida ever, you know. Missed Pensacola, but
Ivan was my first. So.
It hit south of Miami, tore up the neighborhood. Actually, it blew Homestead, Florida, over into Tampa, I believe, or someplace. I don't know where it landed, but went a long ways. Okay. Yep, not good. Very much not good. We don't wish anybody get hurt by hurricanes, no. But we also wish they would leave us alone. Go to what's the website that has all the stuff dealing with our county permit battle we've been fighting for 4 years? Richard
Says Home.
RichardSaysHome.com has a lot of stuff on there about that if you want to read up. Richard's keeping track of everything. Okay, here we go. So this guy bought the book, and he's upset because he's got to pay $10 a month to get on the website. Okay. Let's see. And for those calling the toll-free number to purchase the book, operators work hard to tack on a website subscription. Something should be done to pull that ad off TV. Agency calls the book a fraud. That's a step being considered by the New York State Consumer Protection Board, which issued a scathing press release about the book, calling the infomercial misleading and the book a fraud. And here we go, calling names again, okay? Mm-hmm. What's specific? Okay. I hate that. Evolutionists do the same thing. The guy last night, you know, one guy called into the program. It was a call-in show. I did a debate last night on the radio from Colorado, and this guy called in and said, Hovind, you've got one of the best minds of the 12th century. You know, you're way behind. You don't understand science. I said, that's totally an ad hominem attack. There's nothing specific in there to put your teeth into.
Well, if you don't be specific, then you have nothing to defend.
Correct.
So.
You know, what specifically am I saying that is wrong? What don't you like? You don't like the fact that I say the Earth is 6,000 years old? Okay, well, let's discuss that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you not like the fact that I say dogs produce dogs? You think they came from a rock or a non-dog? Okay, well, then let's discuss that.
Yeah, that's the type of emails we get, you know, practically every day, people saying, oh, you guys are so ridiculous. How can you teach, you know, this stuff, quotes around that?
Yeah, this stuff. What stuff? You know, be specific. Come on,
yeah.
What do you mean, this stuff? Come on. Put some meat on those bones so we can chew on something, okay? Oh, brother. Well, you know, if I believed we came from a rock, I'd want to keep it kind of fuzzy, too, and nebulous, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what finally Pigliucci did, you know, when I kept asking him, do you think we came from a rock? He got angry. He said, would you stop asking that question? I said, I just want an answer. I said, just let me make it simple for you. Do you believe, over any number of billions of years you want, humans ascended from a rock? And he said, well, not directly. Okay, good. That's all I wanted. Okay, so it was indirectly.
Changes everything.
Oh, yeah. Slowly. Came from a rock slowly. Of course, unless you're from Harvard, then it was still quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Harvard or Richard Goldschmidt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when his hopeful monster theory that he published that, the first bird hatched from a reptile egg. I got to wondering about that. And who did this first bird marry? I mean, don't you have to have, two?
Well, it was an asexual bird.
Oh, the asexual bird. I forgot about that.
They're long gone, though.
Yeah,
disappeared. There's no fossil evidence remaining.
Yeah, no fossil evidence and no anecdotal evidence, but it had to be here. That's right.
Okay. Well, actually, one of the main promoters of that whole punctuate equilibrium idea is a creationist now.
I got it. The first bird to hatch out of a reptile egg was a female that was already pregnant with male offspring.
That's what happened. There was some type of fusion mishappening thing.
Right, yeah.
The parent actually, I guess, impregnated the offspring, so the bird came out with a baby bird within it.
That'll work. Okay.
Yeah. Man, we could make some serious grant money.
We should apply for a grant.
We could, yeah.
We're going to study the first bird.
Okay. Born pregnant.
Born pregnant. That'll do it.
That
answers all the questions. I mean, what more do you need?
Yeah.
All you got to get is a theory. And that's it. That's all the evolutionists have a theory. Okay, that's it. That proves it. We got a theory.
They had a virgin birth from a bird.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Here we go. They're calling the book a fraud about self-help to fix your own diseases, okay? But Trudeau has filed a preemptive strike in federal court to keep his ads on the air. Last week, his lawyers filed a complaint in the Northern District of New York asking a judge to bar the state agency from making any requests to dump Trudeau's ads. It's a question of First Amendment rights, Trudeau's lawyer, David Bradford, said. Government agencies can't limit a person's right to sell a book. Got a good point there. Okay. I would hate to be a judge on some of these cases when it comes down are just really difficult. You know, got to really think them through.
Yeah.
Some are no-brainers, you know. And here's the problem. Everybody's upset about Bush saying, hey, there might be an intelligent designer. Of course, the opposite of that is, you know, dumb luck, or, but dumb chance. But they're not even considering it. They say, well, evolution, you know, this creation, intelligent design is just creationism in disguise. Well, nobody's pointing out that evolution is the religion.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. If you want to believe it, fine, but quit calling it science.
It really annoys me when people say that, you know, intelligent design is creationism in disguise. If anyone actually looks at it, I mean, they may have some similarities. You know, we both think there is a designer. You know, some of the intelligent design people think it could be some alien somewhere or Allah. But they're so incredibly different. You know, Young Earth Creationism teaches about the whole sin of man, the fall of man, you know, the need for redemption, the need for a savior. We point out that the Bible teaches that the earth is vastly different than how it originally was and how God originally created it. But intelligent design just says there's a God, there's a creator, look at this world, he made it. And that leaves people with the idea that he made it exactly like we see it, with sin, death, and suffering. So that's,
yeah,
you know, that's completely different than young earth creation.
Well, yeah, I don't fight the intelligent design folks and the old earth creationists even. I'll fight them a little bit, but I don't join them, that's for sure.
Yeah. But when people say that they're the same thing, it just, you know, it really upsets me, because those people don't take a second to sit down and actually read something for themselves.
Right.
They just kind of echo whatever they hear, which is just annoying.
Yeah. That's why they need us, Jonathan. We got job security. Okay, here we go.
For half an hour every day.
Yep. MSNBC.com today by Bjorn, B-J-O-R-N, Carey. Black holes born amid cosmic hiccups. Satellite observations shed new light on rapid process of creation.
Ooh.
Creation rapid. I wonder if we're going to come up to the conclusion it might have been like 7 days. We'll see about that. Black hole creation is crazier than previously thought, new observations reveal. Over the course of just a few minutes, a massive star dies and a black hole is born. Multiple explosions cause the black hole to powerfully eject matter as well as greedily consume it. It all starts with a gamma ray burst, the most powerful type of explosion in the universe, and an indicator that a massive star is dying in what astronomers call a supernova. Now hold it. If we see stars die, which we do all the time, about every 30 years, you know, they get, boom, star dies. How come we never see one form? I did the math. At 20 billion years, which is generous, and 76 trillion stars, which is the most recent estimate 2 years ago, that's 6.5 million stars a minute need to form. Every minute, 6.5 million new ones have to form. We don't see one.
They always talk about, you know, they just talk about these huge stars explode, and
yeah,
there's enough power to create this black hole, and this black hole can spit out matter and suck in matter. They've got a star there to begin with. Do this type of stuff.
Going backwards.
You know, how did the first one take place?
I know. That's why they need us. Okay. Let's see. But NASA's Swift satellite telescope, which specializes in gamma ray burst detection, scientists believe that star death was a single explosion event. I can read the whole article here, but we'll take that up in a minute. Who's on the phone there, John?
I don't know.
I don't know. Hester, who is this?
This is Chester Moore.
Chester Moore, brother, it's good to hear from you. I asked him to call in today, Jonathan. I spoke about a month ago now, in Conroe, Texas.
Yes.
Did I say it right?
The deep south, Conroe, that's it.
Conroe. Conroe, Texas. And Chester organized a meeting of cryptozoologists, and it was great. Asked me to come speak over there. Chester, tell us who you are, what you do, and it's all yours. This is going to be interesting. Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Chester Moore, and what I do for a living is I am an outdoor amateur in zoology, and I write about hunting, fishing, and the outdoors. But a big passion of mine is the pursuit of unknown animals, which is cryptozoology. Every year I organize what we call the Southern Crypto Conference, and we had you come out and speak this year as our keynote speaker. And a big portion of our research that we do personally among the people I work with and talk about the event is Bigfoot research, which is something that's obviously not only controversial in mainstream science, but also controversial cryptozoologically. But there's a big following to this, and I know you had some questions at my conference about Bigfoot.
Yes, sir. So how many times have you been out in the woods looking for Bigfoot, and what is your current conclusion?
I have been out in the woods hundreds of times. spent a whole lot of time out in the woods, and my conclusion is they're absolutely real animals.
All right.
They are a known primate.
We got to break right now. We'll be back in about a minute and a half. Hang on there, and we'll let the folks call in and ask you about Bigfoot.
All right.
All right. Thanks a lot. Join us in a minute, folks.
Jesus. Now, who did crucify him? Answers with Ken Ham, host of the acclaimed film The Genesis Solution. Well, Ken, Mel Gibson's movie of last year, The Passion of the Christ, stirred up a lot of claims of anti-Semitism concerning the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. So who did kill Jesus?
You know, I found it very interesting that some traditional Jews have accused the movie, and even the New Testament, of anti-Semitism. Now, the New Testament accounts, including the Gospel of Luke, were actually written by Jews. The New Testament clearly states that Jesus was sentenced to an excruciating death by a cruel and cowardly Roman governor, flogged by a Roman whip, fastened to a Roman cross by Roman nails, but no one that I know of is crazy enough to persecute Italians as Christ killers. You know, in the movie, Gibson's own hand actually appears as the one holding the nail hammered into Jesus' wrist. Gibson stated that he did this to show that it was his fault that Christ died. You see, if people really want to know who's to blame for Jesus' death, they need to turn to Genesis chapter 3 and read the account of Adam's sin. Because we are descendants of Adam, what he did, we did. Jesus died and rose to save us from our sin. Thus, in that sense, we're all responsible for crucifying our Creator.
For some fascinating information that shows that there really was an Adam in the garden, and that his fall brought death and decay into the world, read Ken's free booklet, The Seven Seas of History. It's available on our website, AnswersRadio.com.
Thanks for listening to www.truthradio.com. Truthradio.com on the Internet is our central location. You may sometimes find us broadcasting elsewhere through a local station, through a shortwave station, but if you visit www.truthradio.com, you will find us. Visit often and listen all the time. David Gibbs and his son gained some degree of prominence recently in the Terry Schiavo case, and they're good lawyers. These people are very well intentioned. They do a lot of good work. They send out a news release, a news letter. I got that letter. In it, David C. Gibbs Jr. had this to say, and I want to comment on what he said. Our founders would wince at the idea that the Constitution they wrote is somehow living and thus open to interpretation based on the shifting sands of societal change. Wrong, Attorney Gibbs. Wrong. They would not wince. They knew when they wrote those words that unless they protected those words would change. And that's the problem with our nation today. We need to set those words in concrete and do away with the practice of looking to precedents as some being authoritative.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. We're getting a squeal in there, Jonathan. What is that? Something wrong here? All right, Chester, you still there?
Yes, sir.
Good. We start off every segment by saying, we're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. Anyway, with that said, Chester, you're in East Texas.
Yes, sir.
And you said you have information or expertise that says Bigfoot is a real, live creature.
Yeah, I do, absolutely. I don't like to use the term, people say belief a lot. I think that almost implies religion. What I like to say is that I have looked at the evidence gathered in the field by others and also myself and came with the conclusion that we share North America with a as-yet-discovered species of primate. And, you know, I've done hundreds of days of research over the last years, and because I live in an area where there are a lot of sightings. And I'm able to travel because of my flexible work schedule and do a lot of research. And, you know, people see these things. And the number one question you get from people, well, what are they? Because the tabloid has it being some kind of a quote-unquote caveman Midwest like there's one Bigfoot. You know, there's a lot of misinterpretation. I like to start by telling people that, you know, these animals are absolutely real animals. There's enough evidence. We could have convicted O.J. on the evidence we have for Bigfoot. And these animals are a primate. They're, you know, I think the biggest stumbling block in terms of proving Bigfoot is evolution, because people get to the idea of these being a quote-unquote hominid, a relic of man, and there are a lot of politically correct people that don't want to do what might be necessary to bring a body in or bring a specimen in. And that's been a big stumbling block of mine, running into people who are like, well, they're some kind of a man. Well, no, there's only one kind of man. God made one kind of man. And, you know, human beings. And these things are simply, everything they do is can be compared to what orangutans do, what chimpanzees do, very orangutan and chimp-like behavior. And there are sightings all throughout. You live in Florida, but there are lots of sightings. And there's just a lot of evidence out there, footprints, DNA evidence, hair samples, vocalizations. And I think within 5 years from now, we're going to have a conclusive answer on this.
All right. How many sightings have been in East Texas there?
Well, that's the hard thing is gauging. You know, in terms of if you look up, like John Green, who is a researcher and author, had collected newspaper reports of sightings all over. I think he had sighted like 50 or so sightings in East Texas. But I'm a member of a research group, and we get sighting reports all the time. I mean, there are hundreds of sightings in East Texas. And the interesting thing you get into once you get out of the Pacific Northwest is that the term Bigfoot is not used in many regions until recently. People will report seeing a booger, a swamp ape, a swamp devil, a lot of different titles for basically describing seeing the same creature. You know, it's the reason science uses Latin names to describe an animal, because you can have the jaguar called El Tigre in one area, a jaguar in another area, and it'll be called a tiger in another area. So, you know, if you use the Latin term for that, you have a way of describing one animal. Well, Bigfoot is kind of like, I guess, would be the Latin term, since we don't have one yet, and describing all these different hairy primate-type creatures throughout America. I mean, there's in Florida, you have the skunk ape sighting, but they're all basically talking about the same thing. And in East Texas, there have been hundreds of reports, and a common name here, believe it or not, is wild man.
What's a typical sighting? What do they describe? What do they see?
People report typically seeing a seven to 8 foot tall hairy animal walking on two legs, dark hair. In the South, the reports tend to be the animals have a little bit longer hair around the facial area and not as quite as thick a coat as the ones in the Northwest, which would make sense because we don't have as cold of winters. And color varying, mainly dark brown, but also some gray reports and black. I was fortunate enough to have a sighting with two other people, including my father, on a research mission in September of 2000 in northwest Louisiana. We were actually conducting research, and it was, you know, when you're searching for an enigma like this, you never really expect to see it. You hope you do.
Right.
And we saw this animal walk out on the edge. My father was kind of sitting looking stunned. I'm like, Dad, you okay? And he goes, look. And this guy, Greg, was with us, and I were like, we don't see anything. He goes, look, and he pointed right where this thing was at. And it was, we set it off. It was right at 100 yards away, sitting on the edge of a cutover. And we got about a two-second glimpse of it, and it turned and ran the woods. And all we saw was just about a seven-foot-tall animal. We went and measured the branch it was standing by, covered with long brown hair. It looked like it was, it moved very, very fast. We found the trail it ran through. And the guy who owned the property, we were doing research, and I told him about this. He goes, Chester, that's Goofy. And I went, no, it's not Goofy. I really saw this thing. He goes, no, that's its name. And I went, what? He goes, well, we've had people finding really strange tracks in this one area along the bottom, and we called it Goofy because the foot looked goofy. So there you have the story of Goofy the Bigfoot.
Goofy the Bigfoot.
Goofy the Bigfoot. But, I think that people tend to, unfortunately, put this sometimes in an occult-type realm.
Right.
And paranormal, when there's really nothing paranormal about it, it's just something else that we haven't discovered yet, you know.
Well, what animals have been discovered in the 20th century?
Well, we got lots of stuff. The mountain gorilla, the giant panda, the okapi from the Congo. Recently, the ivory-billed woodpecker, which I've been doing research on for 10 years, was labeled extinct 60 years ago, was rediscovered in Arkansas.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of animals like this. There was a species of squirrel squid discovered in the Gulf of Mexico 6 years ago that was 19 feet long, never been seen by science. So there are a lot of things. And, you know, people have a misconception that America has no wildlife habitat left. But you fly across the country, you can see how much habitat there still is there.
Plenty.
That's the thing people have a misconception about. I mean, in Texas alone, East Texas alone, there are 16 million acres of pine and hardwood bottom forest.
It seems almost arrogant of people to say, well, we've seen it all, you know.
Well, I think that's true. And I think that, you know, from a Christian perspective, you know, you certainly want to be a humble person and realize God is the creator and God is all-knowing and we're not all-knowing. And I think sometimes we get too arrogant thinking, well, you know, if science hasn't put this in a box somewhere and put their stamp on it, it can't possibly be real. And we know that is certainly not the case.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because everything that science has apparently put in a box was once not in a box.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, they didn't always have everything completely categorized.
And we hope to bring a really big box in one day. And
okay.
And have a Bigfoot in it. But, you know, the goal would be to prove the species exists and work for conservation. I'm a hunter. I have no problem killing my own dinner to eat, you know.
Right.
But I don't want to go around shooting primates because they have slow reproductive rates. And, you know, they're not a species that could sustain something like hunting, you know. But I'm certainly for proving they exist and working, you know, to see what, you know, they're a fascinating species. Maybe we could learn something medically from them. I mean,
sure.
You know, there's so many things that you know, we've learned from, you know, research on chimpanzees and things that may be applicable to humans. So I think there's a lot of things that will interest people besides the fact that we share the woods with the really coolest creatures.
Well, there you go. Now, you wrote a book, Bigfoot Lives, Deal With It.
Yes, sir.
How can people get that if they want to read more about this?
They can go to my website at crypto, that's C-R-Y-P-T-O, keeper, cryptokeeper.com, and I have the information on the website. The website will actually, the main website's down right now, but there's a page up, and you have my email. My email's on there. They can email me about this, and I can get them a copy of it out. It's only $20, including shipping.
Okay.
And it's a declaration of actual field research of things that happen in the field. And kind of a different perspective on the Bigfoot thing, because most of the research you hear about was done in the Pacific Northwest, where the bulk of my book was done in the South and in the East.
There you go. Well, I have personally interviewed 10 people who have told me face-to-face on camera that they saw one.
Sir.
I'm sure you've interviewed a lot more than that. I don't know. In my seminar, I say, look, I don't know. Here's the stories. You know, you deal with it. What is it? You know.
Well, that's it. You know, it's kind of like what I do with the dinosaur stuff. You know, you guys go out in the Congo and risk getting shot. I'm going to look for Bigfoot. You know.
Right. There you go.
But, you know, it's a fascinating thing. And I think, unfortunately, I think there's been so much emphasis placed on this from an evolutionary standpoint. People saying in the Bigfoot field, they said, well, it's you know, it's some kind of the missing, quote-unquote, missing link or relative of man. I think that scared some people in the creation community. And I'm here to say, look, these things, they're not building a fire. They're screaming just like chimpanzees. These are absolutely some kind of a primate. And if God made the mountain gorilla, why couldn't he made a Bigfoot? You know?
Right.
And that's the way we look at it. So, you know, people who might be listening to the show want to be interested in the research, you know, I'm a person who believes in creation. And the stuff we're doing is the agenda of only showing the truth that's out there. And I think it's just another example. Things I've experienced in the field just made me a lot more wonder of God's creation, going, man, he really come up with some cool stuff. You know?
There we go. All right. Well, hope you catch one. You can put it on display in my museum.
I'll do that. You'll be the first stop.
All right. CryptoKeeper, K-E-E-P-E-R, CryptoKeeper.com.
Yes,
yeah,
sir, and I'll be coming up your way pretty soon with the Loch Ness Monster replica to show you. So.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Cool. Any other questions, Jonathan?
Well, I was just going to ask, do they know what, or do they suspect what the primary diet consists of for Bigfoot?
Well, you know, from the research we've conducted in the South and comparing those to the guys in the Pacific Northwest, omnivores. I mean, I've investigated several instances of these animals taking hogs out of hog traps out in the woods, the hunter said, and things like that, but also people have observed them eating berries, eating even pine straw and things like that, which is really strangely high in protein. I got analysis of that done. So omnivores, and that would make sense that would sustain an animal like this and why they would be able to have such a large range as they do, which apparently do. And, you know, there's a lot to be learned from this, and I think it's exciting zoologically that there's something else out there that we could sink our teeth into and learn something about.
Sure. Have there been any sightings of babies or young ones?
Yeah, well, here's a really interesting thing. There have been quite a few reports. Once you start asking around, I mean, most of the people who send the reports in, it's the one who saw one that's like, oh, my God, you know, this giant thing crossing the road. But once you go into some of the rural communities where people accept this just kind of common knowledge, you'll have reports of people seeing smaller ones and things. And I have casts of baby tracks that we casted here in East Texas, in an area we were feeding the animals, trying to get pictures on a game camera. And we were trying to condition them to come into this to food we knew they would hit. And I was able to cast juvenile tracks, which was really, it blew me away when I saw them. And at the conference this year in Conroe, I had a guy give me his entire box of his whole life of Bigfoot research tracks in an area in Oklahoma, and included some baby tracks, which looked very similar. So that's very exciting. And that's something that I think it's great that you brought up, because people tend to think Bigfoot, they think, wow, it's you know, a gigantic footed animal. As a matter of fact, a very prominent crypto researcher, I showed him a track that it was about 11 and a half inches long. He goes, that's not a Bigfoot. It's not big enough. And I went, you know, they have to have a 5-inch foot before they have a 14-inch foot, you know?
Right. They start off small.
But there's a lot to it. And, you know, anything you want from the museum Bigfoot-wise, I've got tons of it. And I think it's something very interesting for people. So there's a lot of people into this stuff. I get emails from all over the world every day.
Well, I appreciate that. CryptoKeeper.com, Chester Moore. Thank you for joining us, and I look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks.
Well, thank you, Dr. Hope, very much.
Thanks a lot. All right, bye-bye. All right, folks, there you have it. I don't know, Jonathan.
I don't know. One of the last things you said there was apparently he has some type of experience of almost convergent evidence. Somebody up in another state completely away from him.
The convergent evidence, just like the guy called yesterday about.
Yeah, you know, apparently they found two juvenile footprints that were really similar in two completely different places, and the guys didn't know each other, so...
If that's true,
I mean, that's got to be some type of... I mean, I would seriously expect to see things like that. That'd be pretty convincing if they're finding the same footprints in two different locations. And does that mean it belongs to Bigfoot? I don't know.
I believe all 10 of the people that I have interviewed are Christians,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't mean, you know, they wouldn't lie, but you would hope they wouldn't lie.
Yeah.
And as I tried to ask them questions to confuse them, and they know what they saw.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't get them off track. I mean, They've got it down. They saw something. And they typically describe it as, you know, between 6 and 7 feet tall. Some say more like 8.
Mm-hmm.
And long hair, like Harry and Henderson's, and they stink.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I covered just a little tiny bit on that on video 7. Question and answer. Just, you guys...
We're at least open to the idea. I mean, we're not going to be so closed-minded that we're going to say, no, I don't care what you find that doesn't exist.
Well, I know, as a kid, I was taught all my life that dinosaurs lived millions of years ago and nobody's ever seen a dinosaur. I mean, that's the standard teaching. And I love dinosaurs. I used to read all kinds of books on dinosaurs and used to go to see the museums as a kid, you know. And then when I realized I'd been lied to, you know, they did not live millions of years ago. They're part of the normal creation.
Mm-hmm.
I said, wow. It just all fit. Like, man, this is great, you know. So... anyway, if you want to call us on the program, our one single solitary lonely line is open, 850-479-DINO, extension 136, or instant messages to Dr. Dino Live. I've got a whole stack of articles to read here, and instant messages, let's take instant message first here. Heave23 is back. That's got to have a story behind that name, but that's okay. We don't care. After the rapture of the church, I've heard there are going to be an elect few that are going to stay behind and help the unsaved get saved. I've also... heard that the elect won't be able to be harmed by any of God's wrath that he unleashes on the earth at that time. You know where this talks about this in the Bible? Well, yes, it talks about the two witnesses that fire comes out of their mouth and they devour their enemies. So nobody's going to mess with these guys.
Those two, they actually do get killed later on, though. And I think they come back from the dead after just a few days. There's, you know, the 144,000 as well, and I think it's around Revelation...
Revelation 11.
Is 11? Okay, yeah.
Right. If you want to read Revelation 11, it tells about the two witnesses that...
And 14 is about the 144,000, so...
Yeah, now here's one theory about this. There are two Old Testament saints that never died.
Mm-hmm.
Enoch.
And Elijah.
And Elijah.
Yeah.
So a lot of people think it's these two guys had come back because everybody has to die. It's the point a man wants to die, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't get to die. Actually, Enoch's been about 6,000 years old. He's a pretty old fellow.
Yeah.
But they're going to have, this is one, the Bible doesn't say that, okay? But that's one theory, mm-hmm. is that these are the two guys that are going to be coming back. They're going to be testifying. Just like Enoch got to see the pre-flood world and how wicked they had become, and he decided to live right and do righteously. And Elijah got to see the time, you know, the wicked kings and all that in Israel. So, anyway, Revelation 11. Hope that helps. Read that passage. Great chapter. My dad wrote that. Okay, black holes we were talking about, Jonathan. The line's open if you want to get on our one solitary lonely line, Dr. Dino Live. Let's see, 850-479-DINO or 877-479-DINO. Either one will work, and we'll pay for the call that way. And go to extension 136. Or if you want to help the ministry save 30 cents, then you pay for 850. Let's see. We're talking about black holes. Penn State University says they notice gamma rays followed by an intense pulse of X-rays. The energies involved are much greater than anyone expected. One recent blast, GRB-050502B, is the perfect example of the phenomena, an initial blast followed by a series of energized hiccups. On May 2, 2005, SWIFT detected the event, a 17-second gamma blast that occurred in the constellation Leo 500 seconds after the initial blast. SWIFT detected a spike in an X-ray light, the hiccup, about 100 times brighter than anything seen before. And it goes on describing the black hole. What do you think, Jonathan? Where do you weigh on this? Are there black holes?
I don't know. I have no idea.
There could be. I mean, I've never said there aren't. Mm-hmm. The evidence for them is surprisingly sparse. I mean, it's an absence of light. Oh, wow, it must be a black hole. Or this, you know, X-ray stuff. I'm a little skeptical. I think that's a wise position to hold. Okay, we'll be back right after the break, folks.
A friend of George Bernard Shaw, who was a professor, said, I'm going to talk to an audience of professors and students, and I'm going to tell them all I know about my topic, and I was told to talk in 3 minutes. How can I do that in 3 minutes? Shaw said, well, speak very slowly.
That was the voice of Justice Stephen Breyer of the United States Supreme Court. It is a very entertaining message he gave to a commencement exercise of a major law school. If you'd like to hear that entire videotape, see that entire videotape for yourself, we'd be happy to make a copy especially for you. If you send a gift of any size to Truth Radio, Post Office Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. That's P.O. Box 344, zip 93444.
I keep telling you about DVDs we have here at Truth Radio that I'd like to share with you. My telling you that has raised some interest, but frankly, I don't think very many of you are interested in these DVDs. Nevertheless, I cannot help myself. I have found a new DVD that goes into great documentary detail about the excesses of the Bush administration, especially in relationship to the sacrifice of our rights and on the altar of fighting so-called terrorism. And I think you should view Unconstitutional. That's the title of the DVD, Unconstitutional. Ask me to send it to you when you write Truth Radio, P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. That's P.O. Box 344, 93444.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live here, August 24th, anniversary of Hurricane, pretty close to the anniversary of the Hurricane Andrew that hit South Florida and Looks like another one. Just a tropical storm so far, but they're predicting may come up hit Pensacola again. Well, that's the small price of living in Florida.
Yeah, nothing new under the sun, I guess.
I've been here for, well, I've lived here for four now. I've actually been in town for two. I missed the last one. What was it? Dennis the Menace. Because it blew through so fast, it didn't do a whole lot of damage, but they had a few trees down again, typical. But anyway, nothing super serious, a few $1,000 damage to some metal roofs and stuff like that. But we hope it doesn't hit, doesn't hurt anybody, and so be praying for that. Okay, if you want to be on the program, 850-479-DINO, extension 136, or instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLIV, and we'll be glad to take your calls or comments live on the air. All right, Jonathan, we've got all kinds of stuff going on here. Too many irons in the fire. We have a college class starting up. If you live in Pensacola and want to come here, we're going to be teaching CSE 101 beginning here in a couple of weeks. We'll be announcing that soon. And you can come to our homeschool classes. We offer homeschool classes here if you live in Pensacola area. Or I'm going to be teaching one on physiology and anatomy. Or anatomy and physiology, whichever way you want to study it. That'll be fine. Either one. Okay. Homeschool classes. And we have our fourth anniversary of Dinosaur Adventureland coming up this end of October. We have now been open for 4 years officially. And it kind of just slowly evolved out of all the cool stuff we have around here. We didn't really have a plan. It just kind of evolved. And man, oh man, has it been fun. We've had 50-some thousand visitors now come through here and learn all kinds of science lessons and spiritual lessons. And so far, having a blast. If you've never been to see our Dinosaur Adventureland, we, of course, highly recommend it. Really, really a cool place. About time kids get a chance to learn the truth about dinosaurs instead of being taught all this one dumb theory that, you know, came from a rock 4.6 billion years ago. Okay, AOL instant message time. We're trying to get to them here. And if you want to get yours in the pile, better hurry. We've got about 40 minutes left on the program. AOL instant message, Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLIVE. Here we go from Jake Mabob, right then. I have a picture that I took on a field course in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. It sure looks like a footprint to me. Unfortunately, I didn't include my own foot for scale, but it was about 1.5 feet long. It was located in Canyon Falls, a roadside park in Upper Peninsula. I know exactly where it is, and I'm going to go back someday and get another picture with measurements. How can I send the photo to you? Jonathan, how do they send a photo to us?
Well, they can email it. You know, it's at jonathan@drdino.com, or they can just send a physical photo to us. You know, 29 Cummins Road, Pensacola, Florida, 32503.
There you go. Yeah. I'd love to see it. Is this, are you saying this, Jake, Bob, this footprint was in rock and is preserved, or is it a human footprint? Or, I mean, a couple days ago I was in Texas, and I got to see a bunch of dinosaur footprints there in North Austin, Texas. Now, I've seen dinosaur footprints many places around the world. So if it's a human footprint, 1.5 feet long, that would be interesting. That's a big guy. 18-inch footprint would have to be somebody. Well, I think Shaquille O'Neal's footprint is, you know, I don't think it's that big. Maybe somebody knows.
How big is the Cold War track?
That's about 16 inches, less than 1.5 feet. It would take somebody 8 feet tall, I would think.
That's a big foot, too. I wear a size 12, and that Caldwell, I'd barely fill that thing out. I mean, that thing is huge.
Yeah. Both my brothers, I think, they were 6'5", 6'4", somewhere in there. Some are about a size 12. Okay, anyway, I'd love to see the footprints you got there. Or post it on a website, we can go look at it. Here we go. Parsec Squared writes in. Dr. Coben, I wrote in a few weeks ago asking about the source you used for the Northwest Passage Explorer's modern antibiotic resistance story. Unfortunately, you didn't have any particular sources to cite since you saw it on Discovery Channel. So I took your advice and Googled for some sources. You asked me to send them to you if I found them. Here they are. McGuire, 1998. Erie, human Arctic fossils yield resistant bacteria. Medical Tribune, page 1, 23 December 29. And Carl Wieland, 1994, Antibiotic Resistance in Bacteria, in a technical journal, 8-1-5-6. On a side note, last night I listened to your debate with Massimo Pigliucci. Yep, he got pretty heated about the rock comment. That was awesome. You are a block of salt, brother. Take care. Matthew. He did get heated about the rock comet.
A block of salt.
Well, we're supposed to be the salt of the earth. And
Lot's wife, she was a pillar of salt.
That's true. So I'm a block.
She didn't do a whole lot, though.
No, I didn't preserve much. Okay. Well, good. Well, thank you, Matthew. Yes, I agree. Big Liushi got very animated. He was excited. And poor guy. I don't know how to explain it to him, Jonathan. Even some of the callers that call in here that believe in evolution. What are we not getting?
What? They have to admit that many evolutionists are just as dogmatic and religious about evolution as we are about creation and Christianity.
Right.
You know, we have the first of the Ten Commandments, you know, put no other God before me. And they've, you know, many evolutionists have taken this commandment, adopted it, and have attributed it to evolution. You don't put anything before evolution.
Right. The theory is true.
You don't even question it.
Right.
Or you're going to lose your job, you're going to get punched in the face in a dark alley, you know, something. If you question it, you're a heretic.
Yep.
So, I mean, we can expect to see some people getting very fired up.
Sure. Well, plus, well, I remember I was speaking in a junior college in Fort Walton. It was OWCC, Okaloosa Walton Junior College. They asked me to come speak on creation because none of the evolutionist professors there would debate. But one professor who believes in evolution, what's his name? It's got Ross in there. First name is Ross or his last name is Ross. I don't remember.
It's not Hugh Ross, though.
No. He teaches biology, and the students got him to come to hear me speak on creation. Then we had Q&A time. He got so angry. He walked up, stood nose to nose with me. I mean, he was just a few inches away, screaming at the top of his lungs, you know. Evolution is a fact, and, you know, anybody that doubts this is dumb and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
That's what happens in your Rutgers debate.
Oh, he got mad, too.
Yeah, he was pretty upset.
I said, sir, obviously this is a religious topic, and because you're emotionally distraught, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If this was really a, you know, a scientific topic, you could stay calm and discuss it. But you're just by your very emotions, you're showing this is a religion with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to confess, I do that sarcastically, just a little bit to jab it in and, you know, twist a little bit, you know. I just can't help it. Okay. It's so fun.
In Christian love, of course.
In Christian love, of course. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Never do it out of Christian love. Anyway, so that, we didn't videotape that one. We should have. That was a good one. I've had several. The one I did in North Florida, Jacksonville, North Florida University, I think it's called, University of North Florida, UNF. They said there were two of them. Okay. Two professors against one. And I brought two of my guys over there to videotape and all the equipment and everything, you know, and they said, oh, if you're going to videotape this, we're not going to do it. I said, what's the problem? They said, no, we don't want this on videotape. I said, well, guys, I don't understand. Why? Nope, if we're going to videotape it, we're not coming. So my choice was, you know, there are 1,500 people there, I would guess, you know, to speak on creation and videotape it or to tell the guys to go home and, you know, not videotape it. And so anyway, we elected to not videotape and let them debate. Oh, it was sad. That's the one where the guy afterwards told me in Q&A time, you know, that he was just so convinced evolution was true. And so I just asked him. I said, if creation were true, I mean, if I'm right, is that going to change your lifestyle any? He said, totally. So if I'm right, you're going to have to quit, you know, cancel your subscription to Playboy and quit the X-rated movies on TV, and it's going to really affect your lifestyle, isn't it? He said, yeah. I said, okay. Now, I said, have you accepted the evolution theory because you really have scientific evidence, or is this really a lifestyle question with you? He said, you're trying to embarrass me. I said, no, I'm just asking you. Where's the real scientific evidence for evolution? Get off the... You know, don't hide behind anything. Just be honest, okay? If you like the theory because it gives you freedom from God, okay, I can understand that. That would be great, okay? But they don't understand it. Even then, you know, they think they've got freedom to do things that God will prohibit them from doing to make them unhappy. No, God wants you happy. He wants you to have the best, okay? The best marriage, the best family, the best sex life. He wants it for you. That's why he put the rules down, okay? They don't like him, though. They think they got something, you know, God's hiding something from them. Okay, here we go. A.P. Zoom Air. Now, there's a screen name. Hey, Dr. Oven, I remember in one of your videos you said you had a burden for helping out Tom Hanks. I was just wondering if you ever sent him anything or ever heard anything back. I assume he didn't respond since he's starring in the Da Vinci Code movie coming out next spring. Thanks for the great ministry. Keep up the good work. I have had two or three people who know Tom Hanks fairly well who've tried to get him to watch my videos, and we have sent them, and they were returned. So far, to my knowledge, he has not received any of my material, let alone looked at it. I do pray for him often. I sure would like to see, you know, one of my prayers is that God will allow me to just sit down and talk to him for 30 minutes. And, you know, I know probably everybody, probably tens of thousands of people want to do that. But I don't even want a signature. I don't want anything from him, okay? I don't want any money. I don't want a signature. I just want to talk to Tom Hanks and try to get him converted, okay? Try to find out where he is spiritually, or where he was anyway when he was 16 when he wrote that article about how much he loved the Lord. Okay, here we go. Nobel laureate. Oh, wow. That means something. Writes in and says, no inherent conflict between science and religion. From RAE.org. What does that stand for, you said, Jonathan?
Revolution Against Evolution.
Revolution Against Evolution.
Yeah.
Okay. The author is Stephen Caesar. I thought Caesar died. Subject, intelligent design. On June 13th of 05, Nobel laureate Charles Townes, inventor of the laser, spoke before a full house at Harvard's University Science on the topic of logic and mystery. And we read this yesterday. I started it yesterday and got sidetracked. That was it. The Gazette reported, along the parallels cited in the talk, Townes said that science has proven that in the Big Bang there was a creation. Townes is one of the growing number of top-ranking scientists who have publicly dismissed the common claim that science and religion are necessarily and perpetually antagonistic. Oh, I have never said that science and religion are antagonistic. I have said that science and evolution are antagonistic, and evolution and religion are antagonistic. But that's because religion, at least the biblical religion, matches perfectly with science. It's evolution that is the religion. There's nothing about evolution that matches with science. There are no observations. There's no testing. There's no experimentation. We don't see dogs produce non-dogs. We don't see matter come from nothing. We don't see matter organize itself. We see death and suffering and extinction. Exactly the opposite. Satan has got to be laughing that so many people have believed his dumb theory. He's got to be laughing at this. And it's so tragic, you know, that I hate to see people have to be embarrassed when they get up and stand before God and say, "Oh, wow, that was dumb, God. I'm sorry." Okay, did we read about case for cloning humans? We got started on that one. Got distracted also, Jonathan. This guy thinks we should clone humans, huh? For therapy, of course, for medical use. Stem cells derived from embryos not known to be liable to MNT, and subsequently the MNT cells contrasted with the original line. That's the middle of the article. I don't want to read this whole thing. It's 8 pages long. I'll read it later, okay? Embryonic stem cells. There we go. It's always in the news. I'm for stem cell research, as long as they don't have to kill babies to get the stem cells. That's all. So, yeah, I'm for stem cell research. Oh, is this the one you gave me, Jonathan? You were talking about why great minds can't grasp consciousness. By Ken Than, Kerthan, at livescience.com. At a physics meeting last October, Nobel laureate David Gross outlined 25 questions in science that he thought physics might help answer. Nestled among the queries about black holes and the nature of dark matter and dark energy were questions that wandered beyond the traditional bounds of physics and ventured into areas typically associated with the life sciences. One of Gross's questions involved the human consciousness. He wondered whether scientists would ever be able to measure the onset consciousness in infants. And speculated that consciousness might be similar to what physicists call a phase transition, an abrupt and sudden large-scale transformation resulting from several microscopic changes. The emergence of superconductivity in certain metals when cooled below a critical temperature is an example of a phase transition. In a recent email interview, Gross said he figures there are probably many different levels of consciousness, but he believes that language is a crucial factor distinguishing the human variety from that of animals. Gross isn't the only physicist with ideas about consciousness. Peter Penrose, a mathematical physicist at Oxford, believes that if a theory of everything is ever developed in physics to explain all the known phenomena of the universe, it should at least partly account for consciousness. Penrose also believes that quantum mechanics, the rules governing the physical world at the subatomic level, might play an important role in consciousness. I don't know, Jonathan. They're trying to, again, get a physical answer to everything, and maybe there is one. I'm not saying there isn't, but it just seems to me, of course, maybe that's all they can investigate is the physical. But boy, to limit science to that sounds a little fishy, you know. Can you explain a thought? My dentist asked me yesterday, I was in there, he said he was talking to an atheist out in California last week when he was out there hiking on El Capitan and all this, you know, mountain climbing and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'm talking to this atheist. He said, you know, when you can you picture something in your mind? Where is that picture stored?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could probably think about it and picture thousands and thousands of things you've seen over your lifetime. Where are the pictures stored?
Hopefully somewhere up there.
Yeah, but, I mean, are they stored in between the nerve, you know, synapses? Or is it a combination of all the connections of these nerves? I mean, there's a bazillion connections up there.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it stored? And when your mind, when you bring it back to mind and you can think about it, where are you thinking about it at?
You have to refile it, too, you know, automatically once you get done thinking about it.
Yeah, picture a horse, okay? All I got to do is say the word.
Mm-hmm.
The sound out of my mouth goes into this microphone, through that little switchboard, into your headphones, and you immediately think of horse. Where is the picture in your mind? I mean,
that's actually kind of interesting. When you said horse, probably the vast majority of people out there thought of a horse. So in a sense, it's a form of mind control. You just controlled their thoughts.
That's it.
Hmm.
We have solved the mystery of the universe. Where is it? Okay. Anyway, consciousness. I've often wondered that. And why would conscience evolve? Maybe our resident evolutionists that call in every day could answer the question. Where did conscience, the ability to tell right from wrong, feeling bad when you do something wrong, how did that evolve? I'd like to hear about that. We'll be back, folks, in about 1 minute.
After you become acquainted with Truth Radio, it becomes clear to you that part of what Truth Radio is all about is that we share with each other. And there's a man in Minnesota who has done just that repeatedly. And one of his gifts to Truth Radio is a DVD entitled Hijacking America. Now, this is something that, yes, it did originate on satellite TV, but I doubt very much if you saw it. This is something about the Bush administration and about the government under which we now live that you need to see and you need to share with your friends, and I'll be glad to send you a copy of this DVD. I'm all set with a brand new DVD burner that works great, and I'm anxious to use it, and I want to send you a copy of Hijacking America. Ask for it when you write Truth Radio, P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. That's P.O. Box 344. Nipomo, California, zip code 93444.
Well, if you feel that way about her, why don't you ask her out?
I don't know. I doubt she'd say yes.
How are you going to find out if you don't ask?
Some things we doubt are worth finding out.
Yeah, I heard about the opening and I'd like to interview, but I just don't think I'd get the job.
Bob, you're the best person for that job. You should go for it.
Oh, I doubt they'd even consider me.
But you won't know that unless you interview.
Doubt should motivate us to pursue an answer.
Oh, I doubt it's cancer. I'm sure it's nothing. Barb, it's a lump. You need to find out for sure.
I doubt they'll find anything.
Are you someone who doubts that God exists?
Frank, do you believe there's a God?
Well, I don't know. Personally, I doubt it.
The question of whether God exists is an important one. Don't base your beliefs on your doubts. Turn your doubts into questions and start asking them. The Bible has a lot to say about God. Be passionate about finding the answer. A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-523-8669. LifelinePro.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to the final segment of the Creation Science Hour and a Half, August 24th of 05. You're welcome to call in our last 12 minutes here, 15, whatever it is, and join us on the program, 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, and go to extension 136. And you can then, or you can instant message us at AOL Instant Message, Dr. Dino Live. I don't understand, Jonathan, these pictures we get of sequences that are supposed to somehow prove something. Arranging things in order proves it happened, okay? The logic there boggles my mind, okay? How does a series of pictures prove something actually happened in nature? Anyway. All right, who's on the phone there, Jonathan?
I believe it's Jared.
No, this is Grant again.
Oh, Grant.
Yes,
okay. Grant. Go ahead.
We talk about consciousness, and it's funny you should mention that. When I was in kindergarten, I'd be thinking, and I started thinking about thinking, and I'm wondering to myself, I have these pictures in my mind, but where are they? I can't see them with my eyes, and yet I can perceive them. Where is this information? Is it like a TV screen in my brain or something?
Correct. I don't know anybody that's ever been able to answer that.
Yeah, I know. I actually, I don't know, I'm speaking too loud. I had a girlfriend who was deaf once, or actually is deaf, but, you know, I asked her, you know, whenever I think of something, if I think of a word in my head, it's almost like I can hear it, you know, but I'm familiar with that sound. And I always wondered, you know, how, because a deaf person who's never heard in their entire life can still think of words the same, but it's not like they hear it like I feel like I do whenever I think of the word. You know, so it's, what goes on up there is just so mind-blowing. It just completely blows my mind.
Is there a difference between the brain and the mind?
Yeah, that's no idea. There can't be if you're, you know, a naturalist and everything's naturalistic. There can't be. I mean,
there have been people who have had surgery that have had, like, you know, half their brain taken out for some reason,
mm-hmm.
a lobotomy, or the brain, the connection between the two halves severed,
mm-hmm.
you know, from some kind of trauma. There's been a lot of interesting study on this, but where are the pictures that we see? Anyway, you got an answer to it, Grant, or are you still thinking about it from kindergarten?
I don't know. I mean, you can sometimes catch yourself, you won't be thinking in words. You just, I can't think of any other language to describe it than just thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Pictures and images and concepts are not spelled out in words, but still perceivable to the mind. Where if you actually tried to talk as fast as you were thinking, you'd be in for quite a challenge.
Oh, yeah. Nearly everybody can think faster than they talk. But I've met a few evolutionists, though, that
probably talk faster than they can think.
Talk much faster than they think, yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Well, hopefully it wasn't the guy Wayne State.
Oh,
no, he can think faster than he can talk.
He sure talked slow, didn't he?
Yeah.
He said, well, folks, when I agreed to take this debate tonight, I got emails from all over saying, don't debate Kent Hovind because he's the Hulk Hogan of the evolution of the creationist. And if I get pummeled tonight, it's because he's a professional debater and gets paid to do this.
Yeah, I almost have. I mean, we played that on a radio program once when you were gone, and it was just killing me to listen to this guy talk and talk and talk and amazingly say absolutely nothing. I almost thought, you know, about putting him on double speed.
Right.
You know, because that would actually make him about normal. I mean, the guy's probably really nice, but
yeah.
I could not go to his class and sit for a whole semester and listen to this right here for an hour and a half a day. Yeah. Don't blame me when I fail.
Right.
I mean, it goes on for, I don't know how long, just talk about what science is. Hopefully everyone who's there has a fairly good concept of the scientific process and method.
You know, that's interesting. Most of the evolutionists I have met try very diligently to redefine science.
Mm-hmm.
Science is the study of things man knows by observation and study and experimentation and testing. Evolution doesn't fit into that.
And that description right there does not exclude a supernatural entity.
Right. There may be one, there may not be one. We got, you know, think outside the box.
Yeah.
I don't know how to help them. All right.
Anyway.
So what's the biggest university near you there, Grant?
Biggest university, LSU.
Can you get a debate there?
Can I get a debate there?
And with me? I'll come take on the whole staff.
You want to come over here?
Oh,
I can
get
in a call, ask if there's any professors willing to debate you.
What you have to do is contact them one at a time and say, would you be willing to debate? And they will say no, okay? And I can even tell you the reasons they will give. Four or five standard reasons they give, okay? then after they say no, write their name down, say thank you, and, you know, put down their department they teach in. Send us the list of names, okay, because we can add that to our ever-growing list on our website.
Building a database, actually a searchable database that students from around the United States or the world can actually browse for professors in their college who have refused to debate you. So that's going to be really cool.
And then after they all refuse, call me and schedule a time for me to come over anyway. I'll come over and speak to the Baptist Student Union or, you know, get a building on campus. If you get a group to sponsor it, then they get an auditorium for free, okay? And run a full-page ad in your Voice Student Voice newspaper. Come here, Kent Hovind, speak. The following professors refused to debate him.
Mm-hmm.
And list their names. Be glad to come, okay?
All right.
I'll take on any number. They can have 20 or 50 or 100, doesn't matter, on a couple simple conditions. I get half the time. Make sure the moderator understands, you know, I get half the time. Okay?
Well, when we had you scheduled to come over here, you had to cancel for something in Texas, if I remember correctly. I emailed one of the chemistry teachers at Episcopal. I used to go to school there, and they teach evolution, being a state-accredited school and all that, about conformity. Anyway, I emailed him saying we had a discussion a while back ago when I was still at the school. You said you believed in evolution. I disagreed. And we never really got much into it. Bell rang, could ring in about 5 minutes, and so I emailed them, told them you were coming, and that if he'd like to talk more about it, he can talk to me there. I emailed him, I called him, never heard from him.
Well, let's try again, okay?
Okay.
Especially Louisiana, I mean, that's a four-hour drive for me, so that's close. Looks like the hurricane's going to miss you, right?
Yeah, it usually does.
Well, good.
I mean, I've just pretty much given up on worrying on hurricanes. Like, oh no, everyone's always like, oh no, here comes another hurricane again. Like, just like the last one.
Yeah, no big deal. Just gets windy and blows a few trees down, and if you're saved and going to heaven, you know, not a big deal.
And it gets really nice and cool.
Yeah, cool sink down. Till afterwards. Then it gets a little hot and humid. Anyway, all right, thanks for calling, Grant.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
Okay, folks, if you want to be on the program, our one lonely line is waiting for you. 850-479-DINO. 850-479-3466, extension 136. Apparently, it isn't pre-programmed in the genes for our caller to call, Jonathan. I mean, remember yesterday, just he's programmed to call.
Mm-hmm.
He has no choice. Has to.
After all,
if evolution's true, there's no such thing as free will.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody does, you know, it's already pre-programmed.
It's not my fault that I accepted Christ as my Savior.
There we go.
Not my fault. Evolution made me do it.
Yeah. Okay. All right, we'll get to the calls and comments in a minute. Instant message us to Dr. Dino Live. All right, who's on the phone there?
I'm just going to be safe and say I don't know. I'm just picking it up dry right now. So
okay.
Who's this?
It's actually Jared.
Okay, yeah, Jared,
thank you so much for calling. You must listen in every day. You realize that's dangerous. You're going to get converted.
I don't listen in every day, but, you know, when I can.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that. How's things at Dartmouth?
I guess they're okay.
Are they ready to have a creationist come in and present the truth for a few hours?
Well, they may or may not be, but I'm not ready because I've got a lot of stuff going on.
Okay.
Busy, or I should be busy. That's the story.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about Archaeopteryx again. Jonathan, did you send that thing over to Ken?
I've got the link right here. Let me go ahead and read that off real quick. It's christiandudesonline.org/100.gif, or GIF.
So anybody wants to see it can see it, and you're going to send it to me so I can open it up.
Yep.
And this is Archaeopteryx and...
versus dinosaurs and birds.
Okay. So your contention, Jared, is that dinosaurs turned into birds.
That some lines of theropod dinosaurs, yes.
Okay,
birds evolved from dinosaurs, yeah.
Why would that, just on the surface, sound so ludicrous to the average person of average intelligence?
Because birds don't look like the contemporary drawings we have of dinosaurs.
And could it also be that we never see reptiles produce non-reptiles or birds produce non-birds, and so this is all imagination?
No, it's not imagination, and that's the reason why I'm showing you this image.
I see the image. I'm looking at it. A, B, C, D.
Tell me what A, B, C, and D are, because everybody knows.
Well, it looks like the four limbs of four different creatures, showing the humerus, the radius, ulna, carpals, metacarpals, and phalanges.
Right. D is a chicken, right?
Okay.
And which one is Archaeopteryx?
I don't know which one's Archaeopteryx. I'm not that much of an anatomist on birds. But
these are different scales, right?
These are not the same scale.
Oh, I'm sure they are different scales.
Okay.
I don't have the image right in front of me because
would that be deceptive to put them at all same scale to try to prove some point?
I think the scale is completely irrelevant.
Well, you brought up the scale, you know, this kind of topic, but you brought up the scale on another picture on the AIG website, I guess, trying to make a point out of that.
But Jonathan, the reason I wrote the scale on that is because they're trying to give the deceptive impression that the embryonic development in frogs happens differently than it actually does. That is deceitful.
The scale
has nothing to do with that.
No, well, it does, actually, because you said the scale on them is deceitful, but the scale on your Talk Origins image is just fine.
I'm going to explain why that's deceitful whenever you get a copy of the book. Until then, I'd rather not discuss it.
Okay.
Okay? Anyway, the point is, D is a chicken, and I think that A is... God, wish I had the printout right in front of me. Can you... Okay, Jonathan, can you give the link to Ken to go to the
Talk
Origins?
I'm looking at it.
He's got it.
Oh, to go to Talk Origins?
Yep.
Do I have the Talk Origins link? No, I don't.
It has the things labeled right there.
Okay. So you don't even know which is A, B, and C?
No, it's because I printed it out, and the printout screwed up, and I came in here to call you.
Okay. Well, I would point out that this is pretty good evidence that all these creatures, whatever these things are, had a common designer. I mean, the design is obviously similar, like a Honda Prelude and a Honda Accord. They've got a lot of similarities, too.
Okay, well, this says A is Ornitholestes, a theropod dinosaur. B is Archaeopteryx, and C is Cynornis, and archaic bird from the Lower Cretaceous. And D is the wing of a modern chicken, modified from Carroll 1998. So.
Okay, right. So I want you to look at the similarity between the theropod dinosaur that they list and the Archaeopteryx four limb.
Mm-hmm. That's A and B. Yep, there's no question in my mind. They are similar, and they had a common designer.
A common designer.
Yeah.
Ken, whenever you show the bones of two human beings next to each other, sort of like brother and sister, is it a valid argument to say they had a common designer?
Well, I think, yeah, you may or may not have a common ancestor there also in that case.
But you think that all humans did have a common ancestor?
I do think all humans did.
So is it not a valid argument then to say that because the complete similarity, the homology between two different human skeletons is just striking, they must have had a common ancestor. That's a valid argument, or is it
What if you looked at the skeleton of a person who whose mother took thalidomide and had no arms and one leg shorter than the other and multiple skeletal deformities?
That's obviously a monster, though.
But
we're not talking about monsters. We're talking about normal adult specimens.
Okay. I would say the similarity here of these creatures is really strong evidence for a common designer.
Ken, how would you violate the concept of having a common designer? Is that falsifiable?
Is your concept that they have a common ancestor falsifiable?
Absolutely.
And how could that be falsified?
That's already been explained to you several times how that's falsifiable.
Okay.
Martin explained it to you. If you found something that violated the nested hierarchy, that would be a falsification point. If you found bird wings on an animal that was very far removed from the bird ancestry,
bat wings.
Just real quick here, I want to really pay, you know, specific attention to the evolutionist, quote, falsification. And for instance, whenever I emailed 40 different evolutionists from Panda Thumb and things like that, this is the type of stuff I got. They want to tell a creationist, if you want to falsify my theory, you have to find, you know, by golly, bird wings on a buffalo.
That would do it, yeah. That's pretty
but that's
strange.
Ridiculous to give to a creationist, because we're in the first place, we're saying neither that nor this is true. So, you know, their only, quote, falsifications they give you are ones that would be you shooting yourself in the foot.
Okay, give me an example of something that wouldn't be shooting yourself in the foot under your view.
That's your job to give us one.
No, you're saying that would shoot yourself in the foot.
No,
we've
you're saying
several examples.
Well, we've got a break right now, but the burden of proof is on you guys.
That's the end of the program. Anyway, if you're calling earlier tomorrow, we'll be here. See you tomorrow, folks. Check out drdino.com or come visit us at Dinosaur Adventure Land. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
December 26th will never be forgotten. The tsunami that hit 11 countries devastated millions of lives that will take decades to rebuild. Lifeline, America's most trusted Christian telecom company, has another way for you to help. No, we're not asking for donations. We're simply asking you to take what you already use, long-distance service, and put your phone bill to work.
changing lives. Call Lifeline now. Switch your service. Get the lowest rates like 2.9 cents per minute and help places such as Indonesia, Sri Lanka, and Thailand while the doors are open so wide. At Lifeline, we donate a portion of your phone bill to relief ministries that you choose, and we've been doing it for almost 15 years.
Phone 1-800-311-2418. Your participation with Lifeline will help Truth Radio.
Does evolution allow the existence of God? Find out on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
Let's be honest. If you believe that God created, but that he used evolution to do so, you have to answer a difficult question. Does evolution allow the supernatural to take place? What is the difference between the scientific evidence needed to accept that evolution occurred without God and theistic evolution? Practically speaking, the physical evidence for both positions should be identical. Evolution is built on the principle that natural laws determine what happens in the physical world. Evolution rules out of bounds for God to get involved in the workings of a reptile egg to produce the first mammal-like creature. Evolution says that there is no need for supernatural intervention to modify some ape-like creature into the first human being. As far as evolution is concerned, God's supernatural intervention could not happen. There is no physical evidence to support the idea that God periodically intervened in evolutionary development. Nor does the Bible talk about this kind of activity. A person might accept that God created through evolution. However, this belief would not be faithful to the physical evidences that evolutionists claim to have. Nor is it faithful to the statements we find in the Bible. Evolution does not allow the supernatural action of God. Even the Bible itself cannot be God's word if there is no...
You are listening to Truth Radio. Our address is Post Office Box 344, Nipomo, California. That